What's that?
Madre doesn't know English.
Yeah, Madre doesn't know English. You can whisper in her ear. Just whisper. So, Om Aganat Simadandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmeditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So today we are celebrating what's called Vaishnava Diksha or Vaishnava initiation. And the initiation is of two types here. One type is what's called Hari Nam initiation. Hari Nam means initiation into the chanting of the Lord's holy names, at which point the prospective devotee or disciple vows to chant a certain number of rounds daily and follow four regulated principles: no meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no gambling, and no one, what did they leave out one? Illicit sex, yes. And, which for many people that's the most difficult. So then, the second initiation, which is called Brahman initiation or Brahman Diksha, that's in which the disciple gets to chant the Gayatri Mantra and cultivates qualities in the mode of goodness. Because in the material world there's three modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And the mode of goodness is the best mode for taking off to the spiritual plane. It's like, the mode of goodness is like the airport. That when you go to the airport, you can get on a plane. Of course, you can also go to the airport and not get on a plane, in which case the mode of goodness is a waste of time. Because you just become entangled or attached to things in this world. But in order to take a plane, you have to go to the airport and then take off for the spiritual world. So, these are both parts of the bhakti yoga process. Now, the word yoga, of course, means to connect oneself with the Supreme. And bhakti means to connect oneself with devotion. Not just the ordinary love that we experience in this material world, which is a sort of infatuation. Like someone will say they love a particular type of food. Like if we go around the room, we ask everybody, what is your favorite type of food? Some people will, of course, most people will probably say pizza, right? I think that's an international common denominator, that everybody thinks like that. But anyway, so you would say, I love this food. But that's not the love that we're talking about, because you love the food because you want to eat it and destroy it and to turn it into something that's not so nice at the end. Anyway, so the love we're talking about involves service. Like the word bhakti cannot really be translated as simply love. It can be translated as a service in love in an unmotivated degree. Which means, according to one great acharya, Srila Rupa Goswami, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anyabhi Lashita Shunyam Gyanakarma Navratam Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam Bhakti Rutamam. He gives a definition of what love means. He says, first of all, love doesn't mean wanting something gross, I mean some material thing from the beloved. That's karma. Of course, the beloved in this case happens to be God. It means also not wanting to be liberated even from God, or not wanting any impure thing from God. So three, like, negative definitions. And then he states, Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam Bhaktirutamam. That real love for God means to serve God in a way that He wants. I mean, many times we render service to people in the way that we want. We think we know what they need. And in some cases, you may know what they need. Like if you have a little baby, the baby doesn't know what he or she needs, right? So the parent knows best. But with God, God's not a baby. Except in Vrindavan. But anyway, God knows what's best, so He knows what's best for Himself and what's best for you. So to serve God means to do what He wants, to do it actively, not simply in your imagination, that one day I will serve God. Right now, I have a lot of karma to work out. I just saw the astrologer. He said, I'm in my Saturn period. There was one devotee who wrote a book, How to Ruin Your Life with Astrology. I recommend that book to everybody. Because people would go to the astrologer and the astrologer would say, I can see, as far as couples are concerned, I can see that you're both not compatible. You should leave each other and find someone else. And so, this is a very important book. It's published by one of our ISKCON devotees, How to Ruin Your Life with Astrology. So, therefore, they took the astrologer's advice, got a divorce, and they found someone else. And unfortunately, the second person they found, they also got a divorce from. So, don't ruin your life with astrology. You can use astrology a little bit. So it means to be active and not make excuses, and then also to do it with a pleasing mood, to serve Krishna with a pleasing mood, with the idea that I'm doing this to give pleasure to Krishna, not that I'm doing this because I have to do it. Just like in the Krishna consciousness movement, we have our rules and regulations. Some of us chant 16 rounds a day and follow the four regulative principles, such as the devotees who were taking initiation. And if we're thinking, I have to do this, I have to chant 16 rounds a day, it's my ritual, just like in different religions, they have different rituals. What was that? Someone was whistling. Sounds like a mobile phone to me. So in different religions, they have different rituals. In some religions, they genuflect. Do you know what a genuflect is? No. That means it's like a cross. When you make a cross. And in other religions, they bow down 5 times a day to Mecca. In other religions, whatever. They do all these different rituals in all these different religions. But generally, when people do rituals, they don't think of what they're doing, why they're doing it, what the purpose is. They simply do it as a ritual. So while we're performing our activities such as chanting 16 rounds, following the four regulative principles, we should be thinking, we're doing this to please Krishna. I want Krishna to be pleased. So that's bhakti. Otherwise, it's karma yoga. Sometimes people ask me the difference between karma yoga and bhakti yoga. Karma yoga means you work for Krishna, but your motive isn't exactly to please Krishna. It's usually to get something for yourself, or you're just doing it because you're supposed to do it. But bhakti yoga means to do things with the idea of giving pleasure to Krishna. Of course, at the present time, we are not thinking like this so much, because we have in our heart these things called anarthas. Anartha means basically things you don't want, like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, fear. And these things are impediments, but they're still there. So somehow or other, you have to try to get rid of them first before you can really manifest devotion. Like Krishna consciousness is a process that you have to work at. It's not that you take initiation today, you get your Hare Krishna name, like you join a club. Like I remember when I went to the university, they had these fraternities and sororities. Have you heard about these things? And you go through a whole period, it's called hazing. I don't think you know what that means. When you want to join a fraternity like Phi Kappa Delta or something like that at the university, or of course I never joined a sorority because I'm a man. Anyway, nowadays of course it's all mixed. So then you have to go through a period where they examine you and they torture you for about 6 months. And of course what they do at the fraternities, how they torture you, sometimes I won't even discuss, well I'll mention one thing. They make you drink a whole keg of beer at once. And sometimes you die. So, and then after you're admitted as a member, you're a member. Then you can enjoy and torture other people. That's what fraternities are, in case anybody wants to know. At some very big universities, they have these things. Of course, I never became a fraternity member, so I was saved from that. But at least I found out what it was. So, it is not like, you know, we're torturing you by making you follow the four regulators for 6 months. You know, some people think it's torture because they say, you pick these four regulator principles, these are the things I like to do the best. Why don't you pick something simple? Like no beetroots or whatever. You know, something very, very simple instead of the four things that are most dear to me in life. You know, because I want to drink, want to take intoxication, want to go to the nightclubs at night, you know, have some girlfriends, boyfriends, whatever. I want to eat whatever I want to eat. And so, we didn't just pick these things because we wanted to torture you. We picked these four regulative principles because these four regulative principles, if you follow them, they'll keep you free from bad karma. They'll keep Kali Yuga away. Because Kali, who is in charge of the age of quarrel, which is this age, incidentally, that's why there's so many quarrels in the world, and we're just waiting for wars to break out at any moment. I mean, on the way here, we were just talking about all the different hot spots in the world. And fortunately, here in Croatia, everything's peaceful now, right? More or less. So, but there's North Korea, there's Syria, there's all these places in Africa, there's China who's threatening Japan right now. I mean, there's so many hot spots, war could break out at any minute. This is Kali Yuga. And not only that, even in the families, you know, husband is arguing with wife, children are arguing with parents. There's politics everywhere. I mean, this is life in Kali Yuga. So when you follow these four regulative principles, you're pretty much keeping Kali away. Of course, you also shouldn't be hoarding gold in your house. Of course, not too many people do that now because gold's too expensive. So anyway, so that's one reason for following the four regulative principles. Another reason is to not accrue so much bad karma. If you have bad karma, you get a bad karmic reaction. Nothing happens by accident. If something bad happens to you, you did something bad in the past. And another reason for following the four regulated principles is it keeps you from sinking into the lower modes of nature. For example, intoxication brings you to the deepest mode of ignorance. Illicit sex brings you to the deepest mode of ignorance. Eating meat, fish or eggs brings you to the deepest mode of ignorance. Just like our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada said that if people like to eat like this, what's called lobsters. You've heard of lobsters before? He said it's like eating pus. You know what pus is? Pus is the thing is... No, I don't know if I should describe it. Maybe someone could translate it so I don't have to describe it. What's... What? Okay, you got it? So Prabhupada described, it's like that. So it's so disgusting. I mean, if you walk into a fish market, it doesn't smell like the heavenly smell in there. It's disgusting. So intoxication, meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, they all bring the consciousness down so you can't really think about spiritual life. So for these reasons, we have these four regulated principles. It's practical. It's scientific. So we follow these four regulated principles. The consciousness becomes brought up. We become free from karma. And then we chant the Lord's holy names. That may appear to be a little bit of an austerity. Chanting 16 rounds a day and there's 108 beads on each strand. And it takes two and a half hours to chant that. But the point is, when you chant the Lord's holy names, you also become happy. You're associating Namachintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuddha Nitya Mukto Vinatvam Namanamanam. The Lord Krishna is non-different from His holy names. You're associating with Krishna and you get to associate with Krishna's eternal, blissful, full of knowledge nature. You become happy. So these are the things that people do before initiation to prepare for initiation. But after initiation, they continue to do those things. But they also have to work on something called, as I mentioned before, the anarthas, the unwanted things. It's not that, you know, I got my initiation, or now I'm a devotee, and I don't have to worry, I don't have any more lust, I don't have any more greed, I don't have any more envy. No, you still got those things. And it's hard work to work on these things. People think spiritual life should be something that just comes, you know, spontaneously. Yeah, yes, when you're a pure devotee, it does come spontaneously. But right now, we're in a disease condition. If you're in a disease condition, you got to take medicine, you got to go to the hospital, you got to see doctors, you got to do so many things, change your diet, change your lifestyle, until you become healthy. So Krishna consciousness means we are not, the beginning of Krishna consciousness, even after initiation, means right now we're not healthy. So we're in a hospital. Prabhupada sometimes compared the Krishna consciousness movement to a hospital. People would walk into the temple and they would say to Prabhupada and to other devotees, why are the devotees in the temple not pure? You know, why are they still arguing? Why is there still politics? Why is there still fighting? And then Prabhupada would answer, it's like if you go into a hospital, people will still be sick, but they're getting better. So the Krishna conscious process can take many, many years. Of course it can also take an instant, if you are very sincere. But I haven't seen it take an instant for anybody that I've met yet so far. So don't think like that. So you gotta keep working at it. Or, like we gave the example this morning about learning how to fly a plane. Gokulendra was there. Nobody else was there. When I was young, not in the plane, of course, when I gave the class. When I was young, I learned how to fly a plane. So, learning how to fly a plane is equivalent to becoming Krishna conscious. And I'll explain how. Like, first of all, before you take off, or even get in a plane, you have to go to flight school. You sit and you study things, because if you just got in a plane, you wouldn't even know what all those dials mean in the plane. For example, there's one dial in a plane that tells you whether the plane is level or not. That may seem simple, but have you anyone here ever flown a plane? No. No pilots here. So if you've ever flown a plane, you can't really tell if you're going through clouds. You may be like this and think you're flying level. You may be like this, nosediving to the ground and think that you're level. So you need to see all these dials there. So you study very intently how to fly. Like we study Krishna consciousness, how to perform devotional service. So mundane things are spiritual things. They're still requiring study. So you study, and then after some time, they let you in a plane. But then still, you have a co-pilot next to you, or you have your teacher next to you, and your teacher has a set of controls, just like your controls, like a wheel and brakes. Like if any of you ever learned how to drive with a dual control car, like the teacher sometimes would have at least a brake. At least a brake. I had a teacher when I first learned how to drive, and he got in an accident while he was teaching me. It wasn't my fault. So he was embarrassed. So learning how to fly, you get a dual set of controls. It's like the spiritual master teaches you, and you're in the temple or associated very closely with the devotees, and they teach you everything, Vaishnava etiquette, and they supervise what you're doing. Or you may be in Gurukula if you're very young. Gurukule, Vasandanda Gururitam, etc. And then, after some time, they let you fly your own plane, but you're not allowed to take any passengers with you. In other words, you better not try to preach to anyone, because you won't know what to say to anyone. So you get in your own plane and you fly solo. Alone. And then after some time you become expert, and they allow you to take one passenger with you. Maybe you can get married. So, but you still can't become a guru. That's your only passenger. And don't fight in the plane. So, a little dangerous. So, and then after some time, when you become expert, then you can have more passengers, but they still won't let you fly a commercial plane because you only have something called visual flight rules, which you can only fly when it's sunny out and no clouds in the sky. And then after some time, you learn how to fly with instruments, and then you become a commercial pilot. That means you become a guru, and you can fly with a whole bunch of people in your plane. So, but it's a long process. Like if you stick some person in a plane immediately and just say, you know, push this and the plane will go forward, it'll be a disaster. It'll be a disaster. In the same way in spiritual life, you need to follow the process, you need guidance, you need the association of devotees. And yes, ultimately, you do learn how to fly solo. Especially at the time of death, you're flying solo, Prabhupada said. Nobody else is there with you. You know, just look around and everybody else disappears and you're leaving your body and say, uh-oh, here comes the Yamadutas. No, hopefully not. Hopefully you remember to chant at the time of death and then Krishna comes and Krishna's associate, the Vishnu Dutas come. So that's devotional service. To work at the anarthas. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu compared the process of devotional service to growing a plant. He called that plant, or at least the seed of that plant, the Bhakti Lata Bij. That means the seed of the creeper of devotion. Bija means seed. So when you're growing something, he said, you also can grow weeds at the same time. Weeds are things that choke off the main plant, and sometimes they even look like the main plant. Because I'm not a gardener, sometimes I go into someone's garden, I say, oh, what's that nice plant? And they say, well, it's a weed. And if you touch it, just like today we went into a garden, and they said, if you touch this, it'll hurt your skin. Right? What was that name of that plant?
No, in Croatian.
You know in Croatian? Well, say it in Croatian. Everybody goes. Stinging nettle. Stinging nettle, right? So, anyway, so you have to be expert. In the garden. So this garden or this creeper of devotion that's growing, and there's weeds growing. There's the weed of desire for prestige growing. Like I gave the example this morning, that when you perform devotional service, one of the causes of the anarthas is the devotional service itself. What do I mean? For example, we in Krishna Consciousness Movement are given a perfect philosophy, so after you get the perfect philosophy, you think you're perfect. And you run around the street telling everybody they're hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. I've seen new devotees do that. And then they go on Sankirtan the first day or first year or 2 years. You're like a hog, a dog, camel. And they wonder why people are getting angry and not surrendering to Krishna. You try that. Call someone a hog and see what happens. So, therefore, that's false pride. And then if you get in a higher position, like a guru, you get even more false pride. Like we were talking this morning, that you have to be very careful if you become a guru. Because every year you get a book written about you. With all your pictures in it. Can you imagine? Does anyone here have a book written about them every year? With their pictures? And everybody saying nice things. Oh, Guru, your lotus feet are so sweet. They can't be beat. Your wonderful lotus feet. And poems, too. You know, you get poems about yourself, pictures about yourself, garlands, people bowing down at your feet. And you look in the mirror and you begin to think, mirror, mirror on the wall. I am the best guru of them all. I'm not saying I do that. I got rid of all my mirrors because that was the problem. Now I just use a little one to put on Tilak. So that's called an anartha. I mean, not only with gurus, with everyone. You start to experience some happiness and you think you're a pure devotee. I joined the movement 1971 and I experienced happiness and I thought, well, I've already become a pure devotee. I realized I'm a coward boy. And this is 1971, you know, how old was it? 21, 22 years of age. So there was false pride even there. Another example of false pride is one time I was out distributing books, Prabhupada's books, and I was pretty good at it. So I began to brag to the other devotees that I'm so good, I can distribute a book to anyone I want. You know, false pride, you know, because I had some success. I was pretty good. And then what happened, they started laughing at me, the devotees, because they thought, this guy's puffed up. And then, puffed up means proud. And then what happens, I said, I'll show you. And then for 3 hours, no one would even give me the time of the day. You don't even stop for 5 minutes to say Hare Krishna to me. So Krishna smashed me. So it's good to curb down your false pride before Krishna smashes you. Because Krishna smashing you is a little more difficult than doing it voluntarily. So anyway, so the point is that all these weeds grow at the same time the main devotional creeper grows. So you have to be able to identify what they are. And not only identify them, cut them out. So that takes work. It's a lot of work to do those things. So one has to be very careful in the execution, of course, of devotional service. Of course, at first initiation, we always mention the 10 offenses on chanting to be avoided, because this is also another source of weeds. And we'll mention the 10 offenses very quickly to be avoided. First offense, of course, is to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the glories of the Lord. Of course, this offense is called the mad elephant offense. If you offend a Vaishnava, then it's like letting an elephant into your garden. It's not only that you get weeds. I mean, weeds are bad enough. It's really bad to get weeds. But can you imagine you're growing it? I mean, here in Croatia, you don't have elephants, do you? In the zoo. But you, I mean, for example, I was just in someone's garden and they had big high fences, not against the elephants, but against deer. And that's bad enough, isn't it, deer? Because they get in your garden. Before I joined the movement, I was growing a garden and cows broke into my garden one day and everything was gone in 10 minutes. They ate everything. So imagine an elephant in your garden, and that's what happens when you criticize Vaishnavas. That means that the creeper gets destroyed, and that means your devotion becomes very much diminished, and when you try to chant your japa beads feel like bowling balls. You understand? Japa beads? I don't know, most of you know what japa beads are. They're these things. They're so kind of small. But can you imagine trying to chant 16 rounds holding, you know what a bowling ball is? Bowling is a big ball like this. Some of you must know what that is. You have bowling here in the country, right? So you imagine 108 of them in a strand. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You'd have to be like Rambo or something like that to chant your rounds. So, wouldn't be possible. So, that bend should be avoided. That's a very, very important. And another offense is offense that usually is not committed in Western countries, to consider the names of the demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, to be equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. Most people don't even know who Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are, so. But anyway, they're demigods and they work for Krishna. They're Krishna's employees. That's how you consider that. So Krishna is the boss and his name is not different from himself. And nobody else has that same position. Now, the next offense is to disobey the orders of Krishna's representatives, specifically the spiritual master. And of course, we don't advocate blind following. I mean, sometimes Prabhupada would test the devotees to see if they were blindly following or following with intelligence. One time Prabhupada was walking on the beach in Los Angeles, and Prabhupada walked by a very big building and said, Prabhupada said to the devotees, in the future, we will have so many big buildings like this in our Krishna conscious movement. And all the devotees said, Jai Prabhupada, as they always did. Whatever Prabhupada said, they said Jai, without thinking. And next they walked by a parking lot where there were big cars like Rolls Royces in the parking lot. And Prabhupada said, there will be many big cars in our movement like this in the future. Everyone went, Jai Prabhupada. And then they walked by a man who was walking his German Shepherd. And Prabhupada said, in the future we will have many big dogs like this in our Krishna consciousness movement. And everyone went, Jai Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, you're so foolish. Everything I say, you'll say Jai to. Prabhupada called them Jai devotees. Or in Hindi, we call it chamcha, which means like a spoon or a yes man. It's like an insult. If you say someone is a chamcha in Hindi, that means he's just a yes man, a bootlicker, or looking other things too, anyway. But he's considered very low class. So we follow the spiritual master, but intelligently, not unintelligently. And then also it's an offense to blaspheme Vedic literatures or any other religious literatures which are in accordance with Vedic literatures. It's an offense to consider the glories of the chanting imagination. It's an offense to give some perverted, mundane, imaginative interpretation of the holy names. It's an offense to commit sins on the strength of chanting. In other words, we do not break the regulative principles and then chant one round just to purify ourselves and then break the regulative principles. It's something like confession in the church, right? Like during the week, you do all sorts of nonsense, and then at Sunday you come to the church and you say, my dear father, I did this, 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 and that. And he says, all right, you're forgiven. And next week you go out and do the same thing and come back the next week. Or there's another religion, which you may not be familiar with. It's the Jewish religion. They have one day of atonement every year. That's pretty good. It's better to have one day, you know. If you have to spend your whole life feeling sorry for yourself and guilty, it's not so good. So they have one day where they fast half a day. That's better than Krishna consciousness. We have so many fast days. I think I'm in the wrong religion. So, one day where they fast half a day and they say to God, I'm sorry for what I did, I'm sorry for what I did, I'm sorry for what I did. Okay, the day's over. Back to work. So, anyway, so one shouldn't do that in Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna, Srila Prabhupada describes that Krishna will forgive you once, twice, but third time you're out. It's something like the game of baseball or cricket in India. Three strikes, you're out. So, and then the next offense is to consider chanting Hare Krishna to be like some ritual in the Vedas. We call them karmakanda rituals, which means a ritual just performed for some pious activities to get money. I mean, in India, you'll see all these people performing rituals to get money. They even go to the deities and they say, my dear Krishna, I have this business deal. If it's successful, I'll give you 50%. And they make the deal, they're successful, and they give Krishna 50%. And some of the deities are so rich, you can't imagine it. In one place, Tirumala, they have pillars made of gold, pure gold. Has anyone been to Tirumala here? You've been there. Pillars made of gold. Didi's jewelry and everything made of pure diamonds and whatever. And the donation box, just like you have a donation box here, it's really small. Tiny. You get it. Anyway, so the donation box in Tirumala, how big is it? It's so big that sometimes when people are giving donations, they, by accident, drop their child in the box. And they don't get their child back. Seriously, because if that happens, they say at the temple, your child is being given to the service of God. You don't give, you cannot take back from God. Happens sometimes, it's really true. So be careful when you go there with your children. But people give gold bars and everything. Anyway, they're doing business deals with God. So, chanting is not like that. It's not a business deal. And of course, and then also you should not, the next offense is to reveal the glories of the holy name of the Lord to those who are faithless. In other words, those who might commit offenses, etc., 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 in the chanting. And also it's offensive to maintain material attachments. Even after hearing so many instructions, it's not offensive to be materially attached, but if you're not trying to decrease them, that's offensive. So we should be trying to decrease our material attachment. What are material attachments? That means attached to anything other than service and pleasing Krishna. But you can do so many things to please Krishna. I mean, whatever you're doing now in this world, you can also do to please Krishna. If you like cooking, if you like, even if you like driving a train, you can do that to please Krishna. How? You give the results of your activities to Krishna. So you don't have to really change so many of the things you're doing, so don't get scared. And then also, basically, many of these offenses come from being inattentive while chanting the holy names. So while you're chanting, you should be praying to Krishna according to Lord Chaitanya's Shikshashtaka, and according to your level of realization, you pick some verses in Lord Chaitanya's Shikshashtaka, and you pray while you're chanting, like Ainanda Tanuja Kinkaram. Oh my Lord, I'm your eternal servant, but somehow or other I've fallen down into this horrible ocean of birth and death. Please fix me up as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. I mean, you pick some prayer that resonates with your heart, and then you're attentive. If you're chanting in such a way that's not resonating with your heart, you won't be attentive. So find something spiritual you want. You want to become a pure devotee? That's okay. Probably not true for most of you. But anyway, so find something that resonates with your heart. Oh, you want to attain compassion? Pray to Krishna for compassion. You want to pray for someone else to become a devotee? Your mother, your father, your sister, your husband, wife, whatever. Pray for them. Something spiritual. And something that resonates with you, which is really important. And so you chant in that mood, and then begging Krishna for that. So if you do that, and guard against these anarthas, be aware, be astute, that means being very alert when the anarthas come up, when the weeds come up. Just pluck them out, or cut them down, or ignore them. And then you make rapid spiritual progress, and then you become happier and happier. Kevalananda Kanda. I mean, actually, pure Krishna consciousness means you become happier and happier and happier every day. I can tell you that my own experience of executing Krishna consciousness gets better every day, and I've been doing it since 1971. And that's a long time. Chanting Hare Krishna. I want to chant more. On Ekadasi, I chant 64 rounds. And this Ekadasi, I chanted more than 64. I want one day to chant 128. And hopefully one day 192, right? That, no, I'm not ready for that right now. But how many hours would that take? At least 18 hours, if you chant real fast. So anyway, so it gets better and better. So that's what the process of Krishna consciousness is, and those who are taking first initiation should hear these instructions about chanting the holy names. Those taking second, of course, should hear the instructions too. So, as far as second initiation, something very briefly, it's called Brahman initiation, cultivating the mode of goodness. How do you cultivate the mode of goodness? Samadhamak tapaksho chav shantirarjivamevacha gyanavijnanamastikyam brahma karma svabhavacham. By becoming equipoised. What does it mean to be equipoised? That means happiness, distress, pleasure, pain, cold, heat, all the dualities of this world, that you just, your mind remains steady, or at least externally you keep performing your duties. Because distress will come. Don't think that in this world everything will be nice externally. It's not like that. You're an illusion. Just like I was at the, I mentioned this also this morning, I was at the Croatian camp, and I was in the island of Iz, and I was standing on the seashore looking at the boats and the sea and everything. Oh, this world, everything is so nice. So nice. Oh, so wonderful. Then I turned around a few minutes later, there were devotees having an argument. You know, whatever. And, let me out of here. So that's the nature of this world. It's a world of duality. Sukha-dukha. Isn't it? Krishna himself talks about that in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The happiness, distress, heat and cold, pleasure and pain. Tamsa tiksha shabharta. One must learn to tolerate these things. So, dhamma, one must control his senses. That's the second quality of a Brahmin. Controlling the senses means you always engage your senses in Krishna's service. Easy. And don't succumb to anger. Anger, greed, lust, or any of those things. Be very alert. Be austere, accept everything favorable to Krishna consciousness, reject everything unfavorable. Shocham, be clean inside by always remembering Krishna. Yaksmaret Pundrikaksham Savaya Avyantara Shuchi Shri Vishnu Shri Vishnu Shri Vishnu, and outside by following the process of bathing regularly and cleaning yourself before eating, after eating, all these different processes. When I first joined the movement, we were very radical about this, because Prabhupada said whenever you eat, you should not only clean your hands and mouth, but you should clean your feet. So in the prasadam room, this is a funny story, in the prasadam room there's only one sink. So it got a little, let's say, disgusting with people putting their feet in the same sink you're cleaning your hands and mouth with. And people would have to stand on one leg, stick one foot in the sink at a time. And you were trying to clean your plates in the same sink too. But. So don't want to be too fanatic like that. Be practical. But Brahman means clean, shocham. And then other qualities like tolerant, religious, honest. Honesty is very important in a Brahman. Of course, sometimes you're allowed to lie if you can save someone's life. Certain circumstances. But usually not. Let's say if people were coming to attack your friend, and you were giving shelter to your friend in your house. Or let's say it was World War II and the Nazis were here. And you were sheltering some Jewish people in your house. And the Nazis came, the SS troops came to your door. Is Mr. whatever his name is, in your house? Are you hiding anybody? No. I'm not hiding anybody. Then you can lie. Under certain circumstances, to protect your life, you can lie. But otherwise, truth should always be there. Satcha Priya Hitam. A Brahmin speaks truthfully, pleasingly, and beneficially. So the truthfulness, religiosity, oh yes, jnana vijnana, studying regularly spiritual literatures, and practicing what you study. Not that you just become an armchair philosopher. You practice what you preach. So these things are very important. So this is the process of initiation, and the devotees there today are taking these vows in front of Sri Sri Gaura Nithai and Srila Prabhupada and the assembled Vaishnavas. And promises are meant to be kept, right? Yes. It's not like when I was young, when you would make a promise, you generally cross your fingers. You ever have to do this here? And if you cross your fingers behind your back, that means you don't have to keep your promise. So we want to see your hands when you're taking initiation. You know, keep them out in front of you. So you're not crossing your fingers. So keep your promises. In cultured, high-class society, when people make a promise, they always stick to their promise no matter what. Like we have the case of Lord Ramchandra, who is, of course, God. And he would always say, I have one word, one arrow, and one wife. So he would, whatever he said, he would make sure it happened. One word. That means, promise something. Not only you speak truthfully, but you act truthfully. Very important principle. Okay, so now we'll continue with the initiation process. Of course, the next item is the first initiate gets his name. Okay, Vlado, you want to offer obeisances to the deities, to Srila Prabhupada, and I guess to my not-so-humble self. What can I say if I say humble self? That means I'm not humble, right? What do you think? Of course, humble could also mean low self, but usually, you know, I have trouble when people say, please accept my humble obeisances. I think, does that mean that they're humble? Isn't it? Or sometimes they translate that as meaning worthless, but actually obeisances are never worthless. They're actually worth something. So, I don't like saying, please accept my humble obeisances. I said, just please accept my obeisances. So, he's going to vow to follow the four regulated principles, and I'm going to ask him what they are. Hopefully he remembers them. Not just today, for the rest of his life. Okay. So, what are the four regulated principles?
No meat, eating fish and eggs. No gambling, no illicit sex. No intoxication.
No intoxication. And should we list the different types of intoxication? No. Nowadays they have, this is just an interesting thing, they have all these new designer drugs. You know what I'm talking about? The chemists come out with new things. Oh, it's not intoxication, it's just something we came up with in the laboratory today. But no substance that alters your consciousness. If you want to alter your consciousness, you chant Hare Krishna and you can stay high forever, as Prabhupada said. And that's the best way to alter your consciousness, Krishna consciousness. Okay, and how many rounds do you chant every day?
Every day, 16 at least.
16 at least. And one, it's not actually an order or anything like that, but people are shocked when I say this. But one thing I suggest is that whenever you have time on Ekadashi, you try to chant more rounds, and it's nice to chant 64 rounds on Ekadashi. I'm not saying he has to, but try that sometime. All of you, try that sometime. One time, you'll find your whole life changes. You'll find when you chant 64 rounds, then you'll understand 16 is just the warm-up. Warm-up before the game, as they say. The real game is 64 rounds. I mean, that's really true. Or we're supposed to be chanting all the time. But you can try, if you ever have a day off, not anything to do, it happens to be a Ekadasi, and turn off your mobile phone, of course, because that always stops your chanting. It's always talking to you. And then, you know, try to chant some extra rounds. I mean, Prabhupada did want devotees to chant extra rounds on a Ekadasi. And I'm not requiring it, I'm just saying it's very, very helpful. And then it really sets the mood for the next 2 weeks after that. Okay, so you get the beads with your right hand and you get your Hare Krishna name. So your name now is Vaishnava Sevadas. There we go. So Vaishnava. For those of you who don't know what a Vaishnava is, that means a devotee. And it means one who serves the devotees, one who is servant of the devotees. That's pretty good. Vaishnava Seva means to serve the Vaishnavas, but Das, one who serves the servant of the Vaishnavas. Pretty good. So that's actually the most exalted position. I mean, sometimes people say, why don't you give me a real sexy name like Lalita? I had one disciple. He said, I want a real sexy name, like Lalita or Radha or Shaka. And I said, no, I'll probably give you the name Bhumi. Bhumi is like a cow, you know. And he said, no! So, actually the best name, the highest position is, according to Krishna and to Lord Shiva, is that one... Vishnu Radhate, the highest position is to serve the devotees of Vishnu. Tasmat, Sankirtan, Devi. So anyway, forget the verse right now. But the best position is to serve those who are devotees of Krishna. So that's the highest name you can get. Vaishnava Seva Das. Okay, we'll continue. You're going to chant the Brahma Samhita now. All right. All glories to Prabhupada.